Sure. How did you get into the teaching business, and tell us about what brought you to Japan, how you got to start in your own school?
Okay. Sure. It was actually a traumatic experience that got me here. Before I came to Japan, I was working for the city of Vancouver as a community worker, kind of one of the rougher areas of town. And one of my jobs was helping to manage kind of a work program for some of the at-risk youth and stuff like that. And during one of the last days on my job there, I found myself lying face down. And we have the parking lot that we run, and then some of the kids, they work there, and I was collecting the money from there. And I was one of the last days on my job there, I was lying on the ground on the pavement with maybe it was 13, 14.
You got beat up by the kids?
No. Oh, okay. He was robbing the place.
Oh. Yeah.
So I had a gun pointed in the back of my head.
Really?
Yeah. And then everyone was down on the ground. I had the money because I was the manager. And I said, well, this is enough of this job. So again, similar to teaching, the rewards are quite intangible and great, right? But there's also quite, you know, working with in that kind of environment, right? And seeing, you know, 11-year-old drug dealers and some of the houses that you go into and stuff.
Now, I always had the impression that Canada didn't have guns.
Yeah, but in this particular area, kind of it's the East Vancouver area, right? So it's kind of a rough area.
Wow. So when that happened to you, you decided to move to Japan? Was that
I didn't decide to move. I decided I wanted to stop doing that job.
I see. Okay.
And then so I said, well, what am I going to do? And then what can I do, right? So actually, initially, I didn't want to teach. I enrolled in kind of a business management program they had at one of the local colleges, a two-year program. And then when you graduate, you work for some company posted somewhere in Asia, right? And then I applied to the JET program, and I looked at all kinds of different options, right? But with all the programs, you didn't really have any choice as to where you were going to go, right?
Business program didn't promise you a certain city or either?
So I wanted to just be in Osaka, right? So just through some local connections, I got a job working for one of the larger language companies in Japan, which I won't mention. And then I was doing that for maybe 2 or 3 years. Uh-huh. And then I started school after that here, after deciding to stay.
That's the children's school down the road?
Yeah.
Is that the one you started?
Yeah.
Okay. So could you tell us, how long have you been in business, at least that first school that you opened, and when did you open your doors? Do you remember the day?
6 years ago.
6 years ago.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact day. It was in April.
Uh-huh.
April 2001.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
That was a big move for you then, wasn't it? Going from just a regular English teacher to the school owner.
Yeah. But I was also kind of managing, so my job before was kind of going and setting up new schools, opening up new schools. So I was kind of, I had some experience doing that already, right? And actually, the reason that I decided to open my own school was another traumatic experience. So, because I was kind of a middle manager before, and it was quite a stressful job. And there aren't any tangible rewards, right? So I was getting stressed from the bottom, stressed from the top. And actually, I was hospitalized at one point, for 3 months, right? And then while I was in the hospital, I had a near-death experience. Yeah, the doctors only gave me a 2% chance of survival, right? So I made it through, right? But the kind of turning point for me came when not one single person from the company that I worked for actually visited the hospital, right? The only person that came to the hospital was the insurance person to tell me that my limit was coming up and they wouldn't be covering me, yeah? So I was broke, I didn't have any money, no salary for 3 months. And then not only that, but during the final week when I was in the hospital, I was on my deathbed, the insurance lady came and gave me a letter saying, well, we're gonna have to fire you because you've been away from work for so long.
How long have you been away from
work? I've been 3 months.
Okay.
So, I'm like, oh, that's very compassionate. So, So at that point, I kind of made a decision that this is, you know, every day is your last kind of day, right? And I've been kind of trying to live like that since then, right? So people say I work quite hard, but that experience kind of taught me that every day that you know, every day is a new life, right? So
it's the first day of the rest of your life.
Right. So, at that point, when I was in the hospital, I decided to, this is it, right? Then I actually worked for a couple of weeks after that, and the first thing my boss said to me was, were you really sick? He didn't believe me I was even sick, yeah? So I was on my deathbed.
Right.
So and he was, you know, so I said, well, screw you, I'm out of here. So, and then, but opening the school was quite kind of a scary experience because I didn't have much experience. And then actually running a school, right? And even teaching, not so much, right? And then I was doing my CELTA at exactly the same time that I opened
the
school.
For the listeners that don't know what a CELTA is, can you explain
it's
that?
Like a language teaching, kind of a bottom level certificate, right? And I was doing that out in Kobe. And then the person that runs the program out in Kobe, Jeff Rupp, he was kind of watching me go through this process and he was kind of laughing, I'm sure. And he was saying, you know, when I started language resources, I had quite a lot of experience, right? You're just doing this on your own, like good luck, kind of, right? And we started out with 6 students, and it was quite scary because I was broke already from my previous job being in the hospital and everything like that, and we had to pay rent and everything like that. We only had 6 students, so it was quite the first year was quite frightening. Yeah. And
so you got your certificate. You started with 6.
Yeah,
students.
Yeah. And I think having the certificate didn't really help me much as far as teaching, because I was mainly teaching kids. But as far as my confidence and maybe also for the credibility of the school, maybe a little bit, it might have had a bit of a difference, right?
Yes.
But yeah. But anyways, I would recommend that anyone who's interested in teaching get the CELTA, because
some type of certificate.
For me, it was like a life-changing experience. Yeah.
Excellent.
And then start opening the school at the same time and having that whole kind of, so it was a very kind of, you know.
Coming from a gun to the back of your head to being on your deathbed, must have really built your character.
Right.
Maybe that has something to do with your success at your school, because you obviously are a very successful owner at the kids' school.
Right.
And now this is your second school, more of an adult school, is that correct?
Yeah, okay. It's only adults, yeah.
So, you know, for our listeners that might be interested, could you tell me maybe your top 3 secrets to success, specifically with teaching children? Because we have a lot of listeners that do teach children.
Yeah, I think it could be the area that we're in, but probably the one thing that has kept me going is, in the back of my mind, my bottom line philosophy, I have a poster actually on my wall, that says, under-promise, over-deliver, right? Okay, that's one.
Right.
And then I have 3 posters. Another one says, success in life is 10% ability, 90% attitude, right? So combining those 2 things. And another one is, do the things that other people won't do now so you can do the things other people can't do later. Okay, so those 3 quotes, kind of how they translate into teaching would be, I'm always thinking at the beginning of a class, if my students have 3 bad lessons in a row, or 3 not bad lessons, 3 mediocre lessons in a row, they're out the door. So that's the way I approach every lesson, right? So so I think that pressure of having to kind of perform or deliver results that way, right? Balanced with kind of long-term results of having a curriculum that looks long-term, right? Is probably the main secret as far as teaching is concerned, right? So always thinking of not, what am I going to do or something like that, but going in with that attitude of every day, right? Okay, so if it's mediocre, it's not good enough, right? So it has to be.
So basically, demanding more from yourself than anyone would ever demand from you.
Maybe, or looking at in terms of what delivering to the kids,
right,
in terms of the experience that they're having, right? Okay. So, and
that'd
be one as far as teaching, right? And then the second one, which is an area that I'm probably weaker in than I'd like to be, is communicating that to the parents, right? So, because with kids' school, there's 3 people involved, right? The teacher and the parents and the kids. And the parents are often they're paying for the lessons, right? So they're often off to the side and they have their own whole, they're not, you know, watching. It's the parents that are watching the lessons, they're, you know, wide awake and they're good, right? But it's the parents that just drop the kids off or whatever, and then 6 months later come in and then say, well, what's going on, right? So I think communicating what you're doing in the lesson with the parents would be probably the second key point. And that's something that I'm still not, haven't got down pat yet, right? But yeah.
How do you communicate with the parents as far as what's going on with the classes? First of all, do the parents really care? I mean, do they come up to you and say, what's my kid learning?
I think the ones that do, they come every week and pick up their kids. And then at the end of the class, I sit down with them and say, well, this is what we did. And they can see, like, clearly the results that their kids are getting. And they're, for the most part, quite happy with that. And also the kids that not only see what we do in the class, but try and support the kids at home best they can and understand the teaching philosophy, for example, right, are the ones that have been with us the whole way and that have really, you know, gained confidence, right? So, but I would say that's a minority, right? So I've tried different things. I've tried, for example, giving letters to people, but a lot of times, you know, some kids will come back and they'll have a stack of letters in their bag that they didn't even bother to give to the parents, for example,
and
right?
Those evaluation letters of class.
Today we did this, and it's just like a checklist, something like that. So, you know, so I think it's a problem of communication three ways, right?
Okay.
So keeping that, I still haven't successfully bridged that gap, right? But with the parents that I have reached out to, yeah, I mean, they're, you know, they'll be with us.
What's the best way to reach out to a parent so far in your experience? Is it through letters? Is it through phone calls? Is it through?
I think meeting face to face.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So, and then I also have twice a year, we do Setsume Kais.
Okay.
So I'll come in and I'll set up chairs in the lobby. Then I'll have actually on a projector and I'll do a presentation outlining exactly with photos of their children and things like that. Exactly what we're doing and samples of their work and things like that. Right.
So the parents know what's kind of.
Yeah, but again, the problem is only the parents that I don't want to need to talk to come for those. Yeah.
That's all. Right. Parents that you really want to get through, they don't come anyway, so
it's harder
to reach them, right?
Okay, so I think that's so one, as far as the kids are concerned, right, teaching, at the back of my mind, I'm always thinking, three mediocre lessons, and they're out the door.
Now,
right?
When you say out the door, you mean if the kid doesn't perform well, you...
If they're not learning, having fun, and achieving tangible results in their own mind, you know, if they're losing confidence or whatever, so it's kind of it's hard to quantify that, right? So I'm always thinking that you have basically, just like in baseball, you have three strikes and you're out, right? So it's that same kind of, so three lessons where I can see in the kid's eyes, they're losing it. Then
do you put them in a special class or do
we do something in the, adjust in the class to bring them back in or whatever, right? So I'm, as far as the kids, I'm always thinking three lessons, that's it.
Is that a way that you also evaluate your own teaching, by watching the reactions from the kids?
Yeah.
If you see three in a row that the kids aren't picking it up, you adjust the way you teach or some methods. So that's also a way to develop yourself as a teacher.
Okay, and then dealing with the parents, constant communication, right? But reaching the parents that are unreachable has been a challenge for me so far. And then probably the final one would be
teachers.
Finding good teachers. One of my colleagues, Will, he said something to me when I was first getting started. He said, finding kids teacher is worth their weight in gold, right? So basically, you know, when he said that, I didn't know what he was talking about, but now I realize, that's absolutely true.
And retaining good teachers.
Right, I think in our case, it hasn't been, like the teachers we have now are all pretty good.
Excellent.
And it's the relationship that you build with them, and then beyond the relationship, the support that you give, right? So, I mean, if it has to be rewarding for them in terms of the results that they're getting with the students, or if I'm not able to give them anything in addition to just a paycheck, right? So my job is also, you know, helping them develop as teachers, right? So if I'm not capable of doing that, then why would they want to be with me? They can just work for anyone and get more money or whatever, right? So I think the third secret would be, you know, teachers, right? So finding teachers, keeping them, as you say, but more importantly, giving them a reward beyond the money.
And taking care of them.
Yeah, that why they're working, especially in terms of, like, developing their skills of teaching, right, for kids, right?
Okay, great. Let's see, we have one of our final topics is you've been in business for...
I've been teaching in Japan for about 10 years.
10 years, okay.
Yeah, and then that school has been 6 years. And then this school we opened last January, right?
Right, so your kids' schools have been, your children's school's been in business for about 6 years.
Yeah.
You've grown it to be pretty big. And, well, for the benefit of our listeners who might be thinking of opening a new school, and actually for everyone who even has their own school, looking back on the history of your school, last 6 years, what information do you know now that you wished you had before you opened the doors in that fateful day in April 6 years ago?
Okay, well, I mean, the reason I'm teaching is because of a traumatic experience, and then the reason I opened my school is because of another kind of stressful traumatic experience. So, you know, I don't think, from a business point of view, it's probably not the best business in the world. It's in terms of if you want to, you know, get in and have an exit strategy and then sell out or whatever. Mm. It's probably not. There's probably better things you could be doing, right?
Mm. Did you learn anything in the school of hard knocks that maybe these people say, oh, I wish you told me that? Because they might be just starting their own school.
I think Jeff Rupp was right. The fact that I didn't have a lot of experience when I started. So running a school and not only teaching, but like management and then... all the aspects, like for example, with this adult school, it's a whole new, you know, and I feel far from qualified to actually run it that way, right? So, and that reflects in the teachers as well, right? So, in their level of respect for me and stuff like that. Right. So, it's kind of a, you know, if I'm coming in already as an established,
But you are an established teacher. You've been teaching. For
yeah,
a long time.
But I wouldn't. So.
Okay. How about as far as the cost of starting your own school is, have you found it, is there something that you could, some advice that you can give us that maybe that could save us some money, or you wish you had known this or that? Or
yeah, no, I think the startup cost, that's the thing, so it's not that expensive to actually start up, right? Uh-huh. So as far as your equipment needs and things like that, so probably the largest cost would be staff, right, teachers, right? So and then support staff and things like that. But I think it's getting easier to do that as well, right? And you know, the thing is, you have to look kind of down the road. What do you want to be doing, right? Mm-hmm. So if, for example, now if I have two schools, so I'm becoming more like of a manager, which is something that I not necessarily want to do, right? So before you expand, you have to think about, I think, what exactly is it that you want to be doing, right? You want to be teaching, right? And then probably the best school that I've ever seen, Peter Warner School out in Nagoya, it's just him in a room, right? And he's doing great that way, right? So, you know, often I think, well, maybe that's what I should be doing.
Right.
Right? So I think if you want to, you know, if you're serious about teaching, and all you need is a room and a table and then, you know, a good curriculum and some passion. And anyone can do it, right? There's a lot of, you know, franchises out there and things like that where you pay somebody Goman Yen to answer the telephone for you or whatever, right? But I think you don't really need any of that, right? Like,
okay. So let's take some questions from the audience. I had some people send in some questions.
Okay.
And I'm just going to read these.
Am I making any sense here? Or what?
Yeah, I think you're making a lot of sense. Let's see. Someone wanted to know, how do you monitor student progress? Do you offer periodic student evaluations? That was one question.
Student evaluations. Mm.
Do you monitor student progress and do you offer periodic student evaluations?
I think
you briefly touched on that.
Yeah. So evaluations, what would you mean by that? Like,
it's not what I mean. This person sent this question in. I guess they mean, is there periodic evaluations perhaps every 4 months or once a year or...
Ongoing.
Okay,
I mean, during the lessons, I'm evaluating.
Right, okay.
So, what you do with the evaluations, I guess maybe that's what they're getting at?
Probably.
Is it a formal...
Yeah, maybe, is there like a paper evaluation?
So we have report cards
that
we give out, and then basically, you know, we have some stars, 5 stars, and then we mark the stars and things like that. But again, it's the face-to-face interaction with the parents who actually come, care enough to come. That make the difference, right? And explaining every week, this is what we're doing, and then they can see the tangible results. Giving the report card, I'm still not, you know, I've given report cards, I do that now, And then for some classes now, every day we give a little piece of paper that says, okay, we did this, please review this at home. But the parents that are that I'm trying to reach, they won't even probably read those, right? So again, yeah, so.
Do you require your parents to honko and give it back to their, give back to you?
No, we don't. That might be a good idea, okay.
Right, okay, great. And one more question.
Also, we have, we run optional exams as well, twice a year.
What kind of exams?
For example, the Cambridge Young Learners Test, okay. We run that. And next month we're running that. And then the Jido Aiken, we give that as an option. I actually don't prepare the students because I personally don't like that test. But and then the style test, Saxon Court style test. And most of my students now take the Saxon Court style test. And that's a good one because it kind of ties in with our curriculum quite well. And it's not so heavy. Like the Cambridge Young Learners Test is quite difficult, right? And then the JPEC as well. So those are options, right? So people that want to have that, right?
They
can do it, right? But personally, I don't really believe in testing that much. So we do give it as an option for people that...
You don't have a formal class to prepare them, but it's like they come in on a Saturday.
Yeah, we try to adjust the curriculum. Like a lot of our curriculum is tied in closely to, for example, the style test or the Cambridge Young Learners. The Jido Aiken, I have no idea.
Okay.
Right, so, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
So, yeah.
Okay, one more question here is, do you believe that Eikaiwa school teachers should have a minimum level of qualification such as a TESOL certificate in addition to the university degree required by Japanese immigration?
Oh.
It's kind of a long question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
What do you think about the
for adults, definitely, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but for example, everyone that works here, they either have TESOL or the main teacher here, he actually has his master's, right? So in TESOL. So I think that would be a minimum, right? And again, because he's more qualified than me, so who am I to tell him what to do? So that's a kind of a thing you have to think about if when you're starting out, if you want to get to that point where... You know, so how do you deal with people like that, right? You're going to be hiring people who are more qualified than you,
right?
And you're supposed to be telling them what to do, right? So that's something that you need to think about, I think, if you're starting out, right? But as far as kids teachers are concerned, the best kids teacher that I've ever seen, that he works at my school now, he doesn't even have a university degree. You know, he just graduated from high school and barely.
This is a kids teacher?
Yeah. He's probably the best kids teacher in terms of the interaction that he's able to get between himself and the kids. The kids just love him, right? So he teaches at several kindergartens as well. And, you know, when he shows up at the gate of the kindergarten, the kids come running out of the classrooms and surround him, Noah, like that. So it's just something intangible about him, right? And then the actual technical side of the teaching skill, I can do that. I can help him with that, right? So as far as kids' teachers are concerned, I think there's more of an intangible, right? But if I'm hiring, like, for example, somebody just off the street locally, if they don't have that, I'd at least want them, for example, to take the David English House introductory certificate or something like that, right? And then have ongoing training in our before they even start teaching, right? So yeah.
So you're doing the house training.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're out of time, and I really appreciate you having the time to do this interview.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Thank you.